I had been in the country for, what, 5 months. Whilst I was reporting at Waterside Court, they detained me and took me to the Immigration Removal Center. The van that took me to detention was full of poo. People vomit in there. As soon as they open the van, you're looking into a toilet that's out of order. You sit in there and you start to feel sick yourself. It stinks big time. That's the environment they put you in, and you travel maybe 100 miles and they can't hear if you cry or die in there. They used to say to us, you can make a report at any time and we'll make our report. What did I do? They treat you as in times of slavery. They transport you, they control you, they take away your freedom. People died in the process of being taken into slavery. Now, they die in the process of removal into detention. They told me they were taking me to a safe location. They posted 6 guards to watch me. 2 women and 4 men. But they were taking me off to prison. When you arrive, they put the van close to the back door, so you come into a big reception area where they have cameras and lots of staff. They scan you to make sure you're not carrying any weapons, a gun or a knife. They take away all your property, everything, including your handbag, your phone, your money, your jewelry. It's prison. It is prison. It's glorified prison. You are not allowed to keep your phone if it has a camera. They will give you another phone, but it has none of your contacts in there, and most of the time, they don't actually work. You can try to put your SIM card in their phone if it will fit in. My phone had a camera, so they took it away and gave me one of the basics. I didn't have any numbers. They were all in my phone, so I had to wait a couple of days for someone to contact this place and find me. They take away your money from you and open an account in your name. The couple I lived with visited me and said they brought in £40 to put in my account because you only get 70 pence a day to use in the center shop. It's actually £1, but they tax it. But it didn't show in my account. 2 days prior to my release, I said, "Where is my £40? They put it in after I asked, and only when I was about to leave. If you're inside for some time, you get to work. The lady I shared with had been in there for about 7 months, so she was working. They pay £3 per day. £3. And you're not allowed to earn more than £10 in a week. The work is serving food and clearing up afterward. The first lady I shared with, I think she was Russian. And the way they arrested me, I didn't have anything with me and she gave me a wrap. I still have it. I don't want to throw it away. I felt like it would never be day, you know. In my mind, I was always in the dark. I would get flashbacks because in the removal center, they come at night to take detainees and a big scream would wake you up. In detention, you don't have a name. They use a number. And the food was horrible. Refused to eat, they got agitated, saying you're telling people what to do, not to eat. It wasn't like that. Everyone has their own choice. They were frightened in case others followed. Always served at the same time and the same food every day. Breakfast was boiled egg, slice of toast, cup of tea. So people used to go down to the dining room, pick some fruits and not have to stay. To be honest, I don't even remember when I went for breakfast. It was like, what for? You go there for lunch and it's almost the same food you're gonna have for tea time. What's the point? In the rooms, there was just like a bed, a radiator, and nothing else. And then just to get hot water at the where was it where we used to get it? Like the laundry room. But it wasn't that easy to get it because it wasn't safe. Something about safety with hot water. So mostly it was like even if you go there for the water, there would be someone watching you every step. What you're going to use the water for. That wasn't for our own safety, I think. I think it was for their own safety. Just in case the teenagers turned and poured hot water on them. We would just go there when it was time to eat. Just pour the hot water and go back to your room. We used to make really nice dish on the radiator, and by the time we need it would be really nice. Oh. This way, we could cook our own food, eat it when we wanted, together with friends, and we would enjoy it. In fact, I met and made one of my best friends in detention. She's getting married soon, so I need to call her and ask what she's doing for food. Oh. While I was in detention waiting to be released, I went on hunger strike for 33 days and ended up in the hospital on a life support machine. There was quite some time when I didn't remember what happened. I think I came from the dead. It was just a protest when you feel like there is no more life ahead of you, and it wasn't even like the food was any good. Like something you'd miss. I told them, you do know what different nationality is. Mostly rice, chicken, often as a curry. The food was not properly cooked by our standards. For example, the rice was not prepared in the right way, and the curry was not genuine, not made with the right ingredients. That's the genuine part of it. And if you came the following day, you could tell the food wasn't changed. Leftovers. We'd added fish or coleslaw or salad. And the lettuce and tomatoes in the salad have changed color and smell. Yeah, we know we don't have a choice, but the lady started saying, you know what different nationality is? Give us the opportunity of cooking our own dishes. Stand there with us if you think we're going to harm each other or anything else, but let the Jamaicans prepare their own meals one day. Ugandans the next, Zimbabweans another day, and so on, just to make us feel like we're being heard or something. But then, that didn't work. So people started skipping some meals to begin with. Just breakfast, egg, and toast. Then it became breakfast and lunch, and slowly all meals that day. Before we know it, there was a knock on the door. We need to talk about this. It was just a protest when you feel like there is no more life to have with food. And the food wasn't even good. So it was like life is not good anymore. So let's starve and die. In my way, I wanted some people to know how difficult it is inside. But because I'm not reaching people, just existing in detention, I thought if I starve and die, then people behind me, asylum seekers who follow, would get better reception or better treatment because quite a few MPs got involved. For sure, I really didn't think I'd have life afterwards. There was a few days when I didn't remember what happened. I think I came back from being dead. They requested for me to be taken to a different wing where I had no friends. I was like, okay, I don't care. Because in chapel, we had ladies from other wings, and when we had made friends, that's where we planned the hunger strike. I was like, you know, enough is enough. It's either we die in detention or they release us. When it was all over, they, the guards, said I wasn't going to be attending chapel anymore. They took me to the airport to break me psychologically. They knew that flight had been cancelled, so they drove me all the way from the removal center to Heathrow. As soon as we got into Heathrow, there was heavy traffic. We could hardly move, so one of the guards went off to go to the immigration office inside, and he came back and said the flight had been cancelled. I said, I told you that this flight has been cancelled. Moreover, they had my passport and my passport had expired. So we had to turn back and return to the removal center that night. Your welfare is not considered. I was sick. When I got back to the removal center that night, I was so broken, so sad, that I felt life was not worth living anymore. But somehow, I was not removed. My lawyer put in a judicial review. Before the hearing was fixed, I was released because they had no reason to keep me. They gave me a train ticket to Leeds Station and I made my own way to my house. When I was at the refugee council, they said, "What are you doing? Because you can speak English very well." I said, "I'm not doing anything because I'm not allowed to do anything." They said, "You're allowed to volunteer." And I said, "Really?" I was so surprised at this, and because they were so nice, they made me feel so normal. And they were talking to me as if I was a person. They were so welcoming. And I met the coordinators of the different projects I could volunteer for. When I started volunteering for City of Sanctuary, it was like I'm a human being again. I loved it so much that I used to do this from Monday to Friday. I felt like a person. I told Rose, "Volunteering is my resurrection." And she took it for her slogan. I have a slogan on a political website. Who would have imagined that? And yes, volunteering has been my resurrection. I was given another chance in life. I contribute to the local community through welcome, befriending, church activities for the community. I do volunteering, which has nothing to do with asylum seekers and refugees. My church has bought a trailer and we give food out to British citizens in need. We help our fellow British citizens who have problems with drug and alcohol abuse. We provide food and social conversation. I volunteer my Christmas day to cook Christmas dinner for them. This last Christmas, we had more than 60 people. So, me and my husband and two other couples, we don't cook Christmas Day for our families. We cook a proper Christmas dinner for British citizens so they get a happy day. We have our Christmas on the 26th. Sometimes I think the community needs to hear this and not just what the media tells them about us. An Indian lady, she used to go to the choir. "Let me bring you there and see if you like it." And that's how I joined. We sang for International Women's Day. Yeah, all the choir. Roughly 15 to 20 persons. We sing about the importance of freedom and why people need freedom. And love. And hope. And yeah, so it's kind of the freedom of acceptance and belonging, that kind, rather than the political freedom.